We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm up your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hello, CMOS girlies. It's a Tuesday morning. I am back in money-making Manhattan. That's a reference to one of the podcasts I listened to, How Long Gone. Chris Black, if you somehow find yourself listening to CMOS girlies, that's a shout out to you. But I spent the past week in Palm Springs, but I'm here podcasting with Emma. We're going to get into a few topics. You're probably tapping in to hear our hot takes on Andrew Huberman, which we will definitely get into. But more importantly, how are you doing over there, Emma?
I've spent like the past seven days, like in bed. I have been very sick. I've started off with, I think, what was like a cold or a flu last Monday, then that turned into a really terrible sinus infection. And I don't really get sick very often. I think the last time that I was like fairly sick was maybe when I got COVID, but I only had symptoms for a day. Then before that, probably when I was like in grade school. So this kind of caught me by surprise. And eventually on Saturday, I was like, I have to surrender and I need to get like antibiotics. So I've been on antibiotics. I'm feeling better. I don't sound any better. But yeah, I just like forgot how shitty it feels to just like have to lay in bed and not do anything. And like, I was like doing all the things like saline spray, laying in bed, you know, hot steamy showers, none of that stuff was doing anything. So I'm happy that the antibiotics are working. Yeah. But I just am tired of feeling like shit. And I'm like, am I ever going to feel well? And then, you know, you go down the WebMD rabbit hole and it's like, you're going to like, something awful is going to happen to you. And I'm like, well, great. But I'm trying to avoid that part of the internet and just like read. I've been reading a lot. I got a Brooklyn library card. So I've been like trying to put books on hold for me to secure. Yesterday was Easter. My mom sent me my Easter basket. So that was one of the few things that really cheered me up during this like 7-day battle.
I love that. The Easter moment, not your illness. Yeah, I feel you on that. I've had weird like running pain, obviously not similar to like an illness, but just wondering when shit's going to get better is tough. And like mentally, when your body is out of whack, I went on a run today and I was like, I don't even know how to run. Like, I feel like a gazelle. I feel like Bambi on ice. And I feel like that's the same thing when you get sick. You're like, what does it feel like to breathe normally or not have a headache or not feel like I'm going to throw up or something? So I'm manifesting all the healing vibes and I'm sure the CMOS girlies are as well. Yeah, my only notes is that it's April 1st. Happy April Fool's Day, everyone. Can I comment on April Fool's? I find it so corny and embarrassing when brands are posting all this shit for April Fool's Day. I'm like, a fake flavor of deodorant, scent of deodorant or like of cottage cheese. Like, I know this is a prank. This is not funny. I feel bad for whoever had to make this fucking stupid graphic post on your Instagram.
Yeah, I feel like people are just like so desperate to go viral. And it's like, babes, we're like too smart for that these days.
No.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy that it's April. I also have one like food recommendation. I feel like this has been like a recurring theme for our intro topics.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you like have people in your life and you're like, oh, I can like go out and like get dinner with you or something. But Apollo's Bagels is a bagel spot. It's by the same people from Leo, which if you live in Brooklyn or live in New York, that is a restaurant in Brooklyn, and they're like sourdough bagels. So a coworker and I went on Friday morning, and well and truly was like the best bagel of my entire life. And you can just like tell that they use like high quality ingredients just from like the olive oil drizzle and just like the smoked salmon that they have. It's definitely expensive, but so worth it.
Well,
So if you're, visiting New York and you want to try like a classic bagel, this isn't going to necessarily be it, but it is so totally worth every bite and the wait. So I have pinned that in my Maps app as one of my go-to spots.
love that. Yeah, I have not been in New York the past week. I was in Palm Springs. Don't really have many recommendations. I did see some horned sheep on a hike, which was very cute, but unfortunately, it rained the entire time I was there. So my family went for a few days just to get some sun and spend some time together. We were kind of going through a lot of grief with it being 6 months after my dad has passed. So it was good to have family time. Unfortunate that it rained. I didn't really get any sun exposure, but we made it through. I took an entire week off of running and I have 27 days until I run this marathon. So my next month, or I guess these like 27 days, is like I'm going freak mode. As I said to my boyfriend, I was like, I'm doing every weird like therapy under the world to like get myself ready. And even if it is placebo, like I just want to know that I did every little thing to feel like I'm mentally going to be good on race day. So that's my plan. I'm sitting in my Normatec recovery boots as we record this. And that's all I'm looking forward to for April is just being a little sea moss girly freak until the race day. But for today's podcast, we have a few subjects. We're going to be talking about Huberman, as I said a little bit ago. Talking a little bit about Reiki, talking a little bit about colostrum, which you've probably seen all over TikTok and the social media. So I feel like there's something for everybody in this episode. As usual, I'm going to call Emma back and we'll get into this week's pod.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Our next partner is a product that Emma and I take every single day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to find a greens powder that actually blended together. The taste is hands down the best greens powder I've been able to find. It even has a mild tropical taste, and you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, you name it.
For me, I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a supplement that actually tastes great. I've always known that taking a greens powder is a great addition to one's wellness routine, but I could just never get past the unpleasant taste. This completely changed once I started taking Athletic Greens. It tastes so good that I actually look forward to drinking it every morning, something I never knew was possible. Plus, Athletic Greens contains dairy-free probiotics, and let me tell you, my digestion has never been better.
Another thing that Emma and I love is that it's the one thing with the best things. Athletic Greens uses the best of best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing.
It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster just like us, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance.
In today's podcast, we will be discussing all of the latest about health and wellness for Gen Z. That's why we're excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of CMOS for Elise.
Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EES System. If you haven't heard of the EES System, you'll want to listen up.
This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New York City or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable, which is perfect for all CMOS girlies.
If you're interested in experiencing the EES System technology for yourself, you can go to unifiedhealing.com/CMOS to learn more and find a center near you. That's UNIFYD healing.com/CMOS.
No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EES system.
All right, CMOS girlies, welcome back to the pod. We're going to start things off today by talking about the article in New York Magazine about Andrew Huberman. My first thing that I want to say before we get into this and give our own thoughts and opinions on it is that you should go read the article for yourself. I feel like I catch myself victim of this with social media, where we tend to listen to articles like through social media, other people's recaps and hot takes, and that like forms our own beliefs versus like if we were to read it by ourselves and then go listen to people's takes. I think that's a better way to critically think about stuff. So go read the piece, go sit down, drink a nice cup of whatever functional beverage you want, and go read it. But the overall gist of the piece talks about Andrew Huberman's mistreatment of women, and there's anonymous interviews from a lot of the women that he dated. And the overall gist is that he had six girlfriends at once, and one of them was a very long-term committed partner. And Andrew Huberman claimed to be in a monogamous relationship. So he didn't tell these women that he was seeing multiple people. He lied to them. He manipulated them, in my opinion, which I'll get into more. And he also gave his long-term girlfriend, who they use the pseudonym of Sarah in the article, he gave her HPV. Now that is anecdotal, obviously, that you can't prove or you can't test men for HPV, so you couldn't like link it to him. But you know that was the only person she was sleeping with. And HPV, if you don't know, it can increase the risk of cervical cancer in women. So I found that as a very jarring, takeaway from the piece that he's Mr. Health and Wellness, and that happened to his like long-term partner, and he didn't really seem to care about her. There's also another Slate article that came out after this first piece, and this author talks more about how she thinks his scientific method is very bunk. She has an experience in research, and she just talks about how he frames his episodes. So that could be an interesting piece to read if you're someone that does listen to the podcast, because once again, it is good to critically think about how you receive information. Like, are you just listening to Huberman blindly? Do you have your own critical analysis with like what he's saying? So maybe check out that piece as well. But back to the main one, talking about how he's a shithead to women. So yeah, he gave this STD to his girlfriend and he had multiple partners and was basically lying to women. I think my main takeaway is that he is someone that is put on a pedestal as preaching health and wellness advice, but he is quite literally hurting the women in his life's long-term health. Not only that, he's also lying to them. And I think as a public figure, you have to get this level of trust with your audience, like people who do listen to his podcast. So if you're reading this article and seeing how he treats people in his personal life, it begs the question of like, how is he, talking to his viewers and his listeners? I think the reason that people are saying, oh, this isn't a big deal, is kind of this question of like separating the art from the artist. This is oftentimes talked about in like music or movies. Like, let's say you find out that your favorite artist has a really bad track record. Maybe they've done something like sexually assault women, et cetera. Can you still enjoy their music and their art? And I think people have very different takes on the Huberman piece. I think Huberman was able to get away with what he did because of dating culture in America, patriarchy, and just like how men can operate in the world. I think there's also this like individualism that happens with dating and well-being, where you're very much allowed to treat people as disposable because of dating apps. And I think his status as like Mr. Stanford professor allowed him to get away with this, as many men in power do. But I think the question that people have is like, are we holding him to some unrealistic standard by this article coming out and all of us sort of questioning, like, is Andrew Huberman good or bad? Because some people say, you know, everyone dates this way nowadays, everyone's dating multiple partners, but I think it's a different thing that he was lying to all the women. He wasn't openly saying, like, I'm going on multiple dates. There's a lot of anecdotal pieces in the article about how he was like go leaving someone's place, texting two women at the same time to go on another date with a fourth woman. And Huberman has a very public platform as well. And I think it's much more than him dating multiple women. It's very manipulative what he did. But at the same time, there's no, you know, allegations of sexual assault or rape, trigger warning for those two things. But I think in his podcast, like you could say, oh, it's just some sort of scientific podcast. I don't care about his dating life. But in his podcast episodes, he talks about psychology in every single episode, like talking about dopamine, talking about hormones, talking about relationships in episodes. So I find this piece from New York Magazine to be pretty related to like what he does on his podcast. There's a clip going viral on Twitter right now of him talking about like monogamous relationships and how important they are. And there's a quote in the piece where Andrew Huberman was talking to a podcast guest, and they linked whatever episode it was, but Andrew asked the guy, could you tell us about how men and women leverage deception versus truth-telling and communicating some of the things around mate choice selection? So that was an episode about relationships and long-term partners and like what are the psychological differences between men and women. So if we're putting him on this pedestal to be an expert on those things, yet we look at his track record in his own life, like that, those things rub against each other in my mind. And I also think too, a public figure has a different level of responsibility to an audience, especially when you're talking about health and science, which oftentimes are very interlinked with virtue and morality and being honest with your audience and like conveying evidence and results and scientific method. But it is this point in culture where like a lot of people are saying, I don't care about the personal life of celebrities, actors, podcasters, if the information is good. Like, if I want to hear about why alcohol is bad from Andrew Huberman, I don't give a fuck if he dated all these women. But I think my biggest red flag from this article was like, if he treats the women in his personal life this way, how can this bias not impact the health advice that he gives to women on his podcast? Like, he's out on Sarah Godfrey to talk about women's hormones. And in this article, the PR team, this is the most damning quote of the article, I think. They're talking about how his long-term girlfriend, Sarah, was like, I was trying to have children with him. And a spokesperson for Huberman denies that he and Sarah had decided to have children together, clarifying that they had decided to create embryos via IVF. And basically he's saying, yeah, we were going to go through with IVF, but like we weren't, you know, we weren't not going to have children together. And if you don't see those two things as the same in your mind, that is not only gaslighting the woman like you are in the relationship with, but that just really undermines your whole credibility of science and understanding of like women's health and like what that next step in childbearing is for women. Like that was a huge red flag to me. I just think, how could he, you know, seriously talk about women's hormones when he still has these beliefs about women being crazy ingrained in his own bias, right? But I think the next point I want to bring up is like, it raises the question of what's the solution here? Does he lose his podcast sponsors? Does he lose this like research position he has at Stanford? Does his audience numbers just go down? Does he need to issue an apology? I mean, he was posting through the entire last week, just like shit po not shit posting, but just posting his normal content, not addressing the article at all. And I think in the public domain, I've learned this personally through like being an influencer and different crises come up, that there's no justice in these situations because everyone that is a listener of his podcast or reading these articles or has a take on it, everyone's going to disagree on what the quote punishment is for this. And there's no way to legislate bad conduct. We only really care when things get to criminal conduct. Like, that's the only way that we have clear rules on what to do with public figures like this. And I think it just shows that, you know, men in power can do anything they want. They start to have this ego when they know that they have money, they have resources. He probably could hire a lawyer, in some sort of like instance if there was a lawsuit between him and a woman, you know? I think he is able, or he's losing his empathy and also really like normal ways to treat people because he is just on this pedestal. His position at Stanford just allows for this behavior to get brushed aside. Also, he was totally weaponizing therapy talk in relationships, which I have dealt with in like personal relationships. And it's just so puzzling as a woman. And I really commend these women that did come forward for his misconduct in their relationships. Because just what he was saying to them was just bizarre. But I do think the question is like, what do we expect of our podcasters, influencers, et cetera? Because everyone is a personal brand nowadays. And I think people are starting to increasingly care more and care more about like what our public figures think about politics. I think Palestine has been a huge example of this. Like a lot of people are unfollowing like Brittany Broski, who never said anything about Palestine. And a few of you guys were like, what do you think? Like, should I still listen to the podcast? I mean, you can do whatever you want. Like, he clearly does not care. He posted through it, he didn't address it. I personally haven't really been listening to Huberman. I don't really care to listen to the shit for 3 hours and get a lot of like very broad stroke information that's just kind of telling me to like sleep and stay off my phone. I've just been really like bored of the whole like biohacking conversation, like even before this article existed. So I'm probably not going to really tune in that much to Huberman. I just think I don't have the, appetite for it anymore. But that's my take on the whole Huberman situation.
Yeah, I read the article as well, and I haven't listened to Andrew Huberman in a long while just because I just don't care really anymore. I just have been like very bored of just like health and wellness in general, and I just feel like everyone's just kind of like talking in circles at this point. And just like Andrew Huberman, I think for me, I just like don't have time to sit down and like listen for 3 hours. And like Kate said, like the biohacking thing just like feels a little overdone at this point. But kind of like my takeaways from the article is that he very clearly lacks like emotional maturity or like fitness. He does there in the article, they reference one of his friends and they kind of talk about just like how flaky Andrew Huberman was, and like he would honestly like kind of like find himself in these like sudden bouts of rage. And just like understanding and hearing that type of stuff and like what was happening behind closed doors really goes to show that like you really don't know a person until you're behind closed doors with him. And like Kate said, like he definitely rose to fame because of his like credibility, and so people assumed that he was like easy to trust, and like we did put him on a pedestal, but we don't really know these people like on a personal level. And so I think we always have to like take things with a grain of salt. And I always feel like there was maybe something like suspicious about Andrew Huberman. I was like, there's almost something like too good to be true about this man. And it definitely goes to show that I was right in that. But he's very clearly like dishonest, and it really makes you question if the claims that he makes on the podcast, beyond like relationships or anything, are actually true and accurate. And I just feel like if he wanted a polyamorous relationship, like that's a totally normal and fine thing. And like you could have found people that would be open to that. But I think it's more just like the lying and being deceptive and like not communicating this to women that he was seeing as like such a major issue, and just putting them at risk, or and having unprotected sex with them. I know there was like one woman that was quoted in the article about like how he hated the fact that she had like a second child and really thought that was like so problematic, when it's like she had the child with like, someone from her previous relationship. Like you shouldn't really have any say or opinion on that. And I think just overall, like given his, treatment to women and like how he obviously acts in these like relationships, it's like very hypocritical of what he says and a lot of these podcast episodes about relationships. And there's plenty of podcasts that he does talk about, like building relationships. There's one about like parenting and becoming like a better partner and whatnot. I just think it's like a little suspicious that like he's still like trying to preach all of this, yet behind the scenes, like he definitely lacks any of this like ability to, be a figure that is able to have supportive relationships. And I wonder if this is like a way for him to like try to hide things under the rug and just to make people assume that he is, when in reality he's not.
Yeah, another point to add to, I was gonna say, he's also old. Like if this was a 20-year-old, I feel like we're in a total different ball game. Your prefrontal cortex not developed till you're 25. I've certainly done dumb shit in my 20s, right? But at his big age, I think this is really, embarrassing. And I think I'm almost starting to see Andrew Huberman more as like that, the guy that's like spending $2 million a year to biohack himself, Brian Johnson. I remember I read an article with Brian Johnson and I found it so like unempathetic. I was like, this guy is the closest thing we have to an alien because he has isolated himself from humanity. He has all the money in the world to spend biohacking. And I think the article also begs the question of like these dudes that are into biohacking. I've dated some guys that are freaks like that. They really are, lacking this empathy. I think they're also just, yeah, it's really, I don't know what I'm trying to get at with here, with this part of, my point. Yeah, it's just bizarre. I think they start to act in really bizarre, unhuman like ways, I guess.
Well, I feel like they start to act like in a binary and they're unable to like really exist like in the gray area. Another point that I wanted to make too is that, he does talk about like going to therapy a lot, and someone who does have such like, a high IQ, I'm still, do believe that he's like smart, like he's an associate professor at Stanford. But I think beyond that, like it's just a little ironic that he preaches, self-growth, yet continues to engage in like behaviors that do the opposite, such as like manipulation, lying, cheating, and flaking. And he always talks about, like dopamine and like not like letting your dopamine levels like constantly hit or whatever. And it's like, I feel like you constantly talking to women and like having sex with multiple different women is like kind of the total opposite of like what you talk about when it's when you're trying to like set boundaries with like your dopamine levels almost. And I think like in terms of like, is this going to impact him? Like, we don't know the stats on his listenership, but I'm assuming that it's probably predominantly male. And like, I know he's been on Joe Rogan, so I'm sure there's like a huge overlap in that, you know, listenership base. And I feel like those people just like easily, you know, sweep things under the rug, don't really give a shit just because they like idolize these like male figures in like the podcasting world. And like Kate said, he didn't address it. So I'm sure a lot of these listeners like maybe didn't even like see the article. I'm probably not gonna really like listen to him go forward. I already wasn't to begin with, but yeah, I think it's just like a shame that this did happen. And, you know, you just kind of have to make the decision for yourself if you're going to continue to listen or not. Has he done great things for the health and wellness community? Yeah, sure. But also at the end of the day, like, he's a pretty awful person. And like, when you have this much influence, especially like as a male figure, you know, kind of giving like other men the green flag that, like, hey, you can like do all this stuff to self-optimize yourself, and it's like still fine to like mistreat women and like lie and be manipulative. That definitely puts like a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm putting him more in the camp of like the Joe Rogans and people like that, which is unfortunate when you do find these things out about a public figure. Because yeah, I'm definitely like, wow, should I really listen to any of the teachings that he said in any of his podcast episodes? Because like Emma said, he has a lot of flaws and is preaching like quite contradictory advice. So yeah, that's our little bit on Huberman. Let us know your thoughts. The part of the pod that I'm going to talk about next subject is going to be Reiki. A few of you guys have asked about Reiki and energy healing, and so I thought, why not talk about it on the pod? I think I hear that term a lot, and I'm like, what even is Reiki? So, where is it from? The origins, the culture? It's originally from Japan. It was developed in like the 1920s by someone named Macao Usu. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. He traveled widely in Japan during the last 4 years of his life, and he offered these spiritual teachings to more than 2,000 beginning students. And there were about 16 people that became Reiki masters. First clinic opened up in Tokyo. Reiki was quickly brought to Hawaii and the mainland in 1937. And what are the general beliefs of Reiki? I feel like a lot of people kind of vaguely think they know what energy healing is, myself included. Like, yeah, you're going to like make yourself feel better, more spiritual, more positive. But Reiki energy comes from something called the higher power, which exists on a higher dimension than the physical world that we are familiar with. So the thought is that energy is going to enter the top of the practitioner's head. And it's going to flow through the body out of the hands. And that's why if you've ever seen what Reiki looks like, it oftentimes is someone laying down and like a practitioner putting their hands in the air, like above someone. And it appears to flow this way because of our perspectives. However, the true source of Reiki energy is within ourselves. So this does not mean that our personal energy is like using Reiki, but the energy is coming from this transcendental part of ourselves that's connected to this infinite supply of healing energy in the universe. So if that was hippie woo-woo for you, like buckle up because that's what this whole segment is about. The logic is that Reiki is going to lessen stress. It's going to bring your body back into balance, and it's also going to help the body's healing mechanisms start to work better on their own. So think of anyone with any sort of like body, like physical body ailment, any sort of injury or inflammation. Also think of people that may have, any sort of ailment. I'm not going to go as far to say disease because Reiki is not supposed to be curing or healing any sort of serious disease. But I think people's kind of, issue with Reiki is like, is it valid? Is it scientific? Like, is it credible? It seems like some wacky Eastern thing. Like, I feel like that's what I hear from people oftentimes. There is increasing research evidence that's documenting the effects of Reiki. Some of the effects include things like lowered heart rate, blood pressure, stress hormones, and increased immunity. But we only have very broad theories as to what causes these effects or pathways like in the healing process. And the broad idea from that is basically like Reiki works on multiple health systems. So it's not just going to clear up the inflammation in your knee, but it's going to help with overall stress in the body, like as an example. But I think Reiki is at this interesting point of Eastern and Western medicine. And I really had to rethink my own biases, which tends to be rooted in like more Western medicine, but definitely more Eastern in the past, years or so, and especially with doing CMOS girlies. In the medical science world, there's something called the biofield. And they've adopted this term to talk about what is the intricately layered vibrational energy field that's supposed to surround and penetrate your body. It's supposed to be very subtle, and there's actually no conventional scientific technology that can document this existence. But at the same time, for thousands of years, traditional indigenous medical systems have recognized this balanced, evenly pulsing biofield as a foundation of health and well-being. And they see any sort of disruption of this balance as the beginning of illness. So that's just sort of the general way that Western and Eastern treat disease and illness in the body. And the theory is that Reiki practitioners' hands are going to be carrying this energetic vibration into the recipient's body. So that's like what a Re Reiki practitioner would do. It would do translate this energy into your own body. And Reiki seems to connect the practitioner with this inner source of peace, like no matter how you feel in the moment, kind of back to how we should be. So whether you just lost your job and you're really stressed out, and then you go to a Reiki session, they say that it's supposed to be healing your body regardless of like what is happening in the now. And that we should all be operating in this place of like peace almost in our body, tranquility, regardless of what circumstances happen. But I think in the Western world, like when problems do come up, they get stored in the body and they sit in the body, and we kind of go through our life, we're on the go, and we don't think about things that are happening to us. And many therapies are very similar to Reiki in the sense that certain therapies are going to be aiming to restore balance in the biofield. Things like acupuncture, shiatsu, yoga all try to realign your body and bring it to balance. I think Reiki is the subtlest of these things, balancing the body through like vibrations versus like force, like yoga, like you sitting in a pigeon pose. And it's also, some practitioners say that Reiki might be closer to meditation than like energy therapies. So it is kind of differing of like what Reiki is when we do try to classify it or pin it down. And what a session is like, I mean, there's no touching, and so people are still, figuring out like how to classify this, as I just said. The Reiki practitioner's hands are still for most of the treatment. They only really move their hands to change different hand placements based on like what your body needs. And additionally, they don't try to control the energy. They just lightly rest your body above your body or on the body. And this is all spontaneous as to like what the individual needs. So it's very individually focused therapy for what you do need. And how do you become a Reiki practitioner? So there's no special background or credentials for this. I mean, Reiki masters oftentimes give their students certificates, but they're not supported by like Western educational standards. They're not agreed upon in the community. And certificates, are not going to be as like important in the Reiki practitioner world. But I think some questions, if you are looking to go down this mode of therapy, perhaps, is like asking your practitioner, where were you trained? Who taught you? Oftentimes this is taught from like Reiki master to Reiki master and kind of passing that knowledge down. So if someone is like self-taught, that could definitely be a red flag. How long were their classes? How long did they study it? And like also, what do they define Reiki as? If they say something like, I use Reiki to cure disease, I think run away from that. Like that's a huge red flag and not what the therapy is supposed to be used as, like as its traditional use. And an interesting stat is that as of 2007, about 800 hospitals in the United States have Reiki in their model of care. So if you were at a hospital for, whatever ailment under the sun, Reiki could actually be an opportunity that like the Western medical establishment does give you as an option. So you can look for a healthcare provider in a private setting who does Reiki. You could seek it, through the internet elsewhere. But I think a lot of people ask, is it legitimate? What can it be good for? Because most results are going to be anecdotal because they do come from Eastern medicine. And there was an interesting thing that Reiki is apparently not compatible with the Catholic Church. So there's a bunch of articles about how Reiki and kind of not challenges Catholicism or Christianity, but it is sort of at this conflict because it is preaching a different way of how energy works, the world works, et cetera. It's kind of quasi-spiritual in a way. And I'm making this statement as someone that is not religious at all, so take this with a grain of salt. But I think it's very interesting that people question the power of Reiki as illegitimate because it needs some sort of scientific backing and healing, evidence in like science, right? When almost every single religion comes from text, comes from spreading word of mouth, it doesn't come from science at all. So I understand if you're coming from like the perspective of wanting, clinical studies and you want your supplements tested by the FDA, but like there are some things that do exist in the world, like religion, that are just very spiritual and you just believe in it, right? And I read this book called Why Woo Woo Works a while ago, and it talks about different, atraditional or Eastern medicine practices. Reiki comes up in the book, and I would say the main thesis of that book that I want to tie in here is that The book talks about the power of placebo and how serious placebo effect is in almost every single therapy that might be something that people don't think has legitimacy. If the person that was in this study believed in the therapy, it probably would heal them in some way or get them some like beneficial results. So when they did go through the Reiki part, like if the people believe that Reiki can heal them, it healed them more than the participants that didn't believe that. So that's just a food for thought. And I guess my overall takes on Reiki is like people are more stressed than ever. If you find someone and it works for you, good. If you're not interested, like move on, I guess. Because it does have some like healing powers and it has a lot of credibility in the Eastern world. So I do think it is legitimate for that reason.
The last topic that we're going to talk about is colostrum, which I'm sure is long overdue. I haven't been on TikTok in the longest of time, and I know this is where it's been primarily discussed. But I've gotten questions about it, like in my own personal life, and someone also requested it from the meme page for us to chat about it. So I figured, you know what? It is time for me to learn what colostrum is all about. So kind of starting off with what is it? It is a milk-like substance that mammals produce the first days after giving birth. So this includes us as humans and any other type of mammal. It's a really rich source of like antibodies, antioxidants, antimicrobial proteins, and other just like essential nutrients that are needed to nourish and build the baby's immune system. And colostrum is only produced for like a very short period of time. It's only about like 1 to 4 teaspoons of colostrum per day that are produced by the mother for about 2 to 5 days before like transitional milk takes over. And a lot of researchers and experts kind of in the space really consider colostrum as liquid gold just because of like how rich in nutrients it is and just like how many things that it does for the baby's body and overall health. And sort of like, why is this trending and why is everyone talking about it? On TikTok, it's definitely found its way into like the mainstream wellness circles. And I think a lot of it has to be due to this one brand called Armra, Armra. It's a brand of colostrum. And they really kind of ignited the flame and really made the conversation around colostrum really spread like rapid fire. And I feel like they're kind of similar to Bloom Nutrition, where they just sort of popped out of nowhere and you were just getting targeted ads left and right each time you opened up social media, and it was being promoted on, you know, wellness and lifestyle podcasts and, you know, promoted by many women that I think a lot of us perhaps look up to or a lot of us follow on social media that are these like health and wellness influencers. Armra, I did a little like research on like who even founded it, how long it's been around, et cetera. It was founded by a double board certified pediatric neurologist, Sarah Rahel, and on their website, they claim that they have sold 50 million scoops. And like the benefits that they claim on their site and just like colostrum in general, whenever you read articles or watch TikTok videos, is that, you know, can benefit things such as like improving your gut health, igniting metabolism is what Armra says on their website. Improving skin and nails. And these statements definitely align with what is currently trending in wellness and what the Goop girlies kind of bow down to. It's like definitely rooted in things that are more like vanity focused, you know, your overall appearance. I think like making yourself like look young, snatched, and like having like this like perfect gut health and like not bloating. And so I think due to these claims, it really set colostrum up for success. And I think a lot of people like to immediately jump to this conclusion that if human colostrum can work and is beneficial, then so can like bovine colostrum, which is what I'm going to get to in a second. So it really comes as no surprise, you know, great marketing, great usage of influencers, and also just like utilizing, you know, certain claims that kind of align with what is trending in general health and wellness right now. But a lot of the colostrum supplements, actually all of them that you will find online, actually come from cows. And this is why it's called bovine colostrum, because obviously we're not going to be drinking like human colostrum. And researchers have been interested in the health benefits for this for a while, which I think is valid if we know that, you know, I mean, we all take collagen and, you know, collagen is something that is naturally produced in our body. And we're all taking, you know, animal-based collagen now because it does provide similar benefits to like the collagen that's naturally produced in our bodies. And bovine colostrum, one of the biggest differences between like human colostrum is like, A, obviously bovine colostrum comes from cows. And so therefore the colostrum that a mother cow is going to be producing is going to be very different than, you know, a human mother. And that's because it's going to have specific antibodies that a cow would likely experience versus a human. And also there's going to be more protein in bovine colostrum versus human colostrum. And Studies surrounding like colostrum and its efficacy are, slightly varied, and there's really just been like mixed results. And it's really because they're unsure how colostrum may help with gut issues because no evidence really currently exists to make the case that bovine colostrum would work the same as adults. And, I read an article in the New York Times and they reference a few studies. There's one that was done on a study of kids. It was about like 150 kids that had fairly frequent diarrhea. And after taking, they split the kids into two groups. One had a placebo, one had the bovine colostrum. And they found that those that took the colostrum had less diarrhea than those who had the placebo. There was another study on about 445 participants, and they found the supplement may decrease respiratory infections. There's really right now no data on supporting the skin and the benefits for that. So I think whenever you see that, definitely just kind of like raise your eyebrow. But there's really so much variability when it comes to bovine supplements and bovine colostrum, and it's really because it's only produced for a few days. So my question is like, will the colostrum collected on day three contain the same levels of antibodies as it? The colostrum that was maybe collected on day one. Also, colostrum is a supplement, so it's not regulated by the FDA. So it's really on to, the supplement manufacturers and the brands to do the third party testing and like ensure that they're actually getting like, legit bovine colostrum from like an actually healthy cow. Like, I don't think I would want to be taking bovine colostrum that came from a cow that wasn't like grass fed or grass finished just because. We're then consuming whatever basically the bovine the cow was consuming if it was on a grain-fed diet, and we know that there's a difference in nutrient profiles from grass-fed versus one that maybe was raised in a more conventional way. And there's also no long-term study case studies on colostrum, so we really have no understanding how consistent you must be with it. And one call out that New York Times makes in their article is that majority of the studies that have been conducted by supplement makers or by people that have ties to colostrum companies. So that is another thing where it just kind of like raises a slight red flag where it's kind of like, are they hiding anything? Did they kind of try to like twist some of the results to make it seem favorable for bovine colostrum? And kind of now, like, should we take it? Like, is it necessary? I would say, like, no, it's not necessary. Like, A, colostrum is not something that is like needed for us to survive as humans. There's also, again, zero regulation on supplements, like I said. With how bovine colostrum is processed, it is heated for sterilization and also dried. And this has been mentioned in many articles that it can impact and even destroy the parts that make colostrum, quote unquote, this liquid gold. So it's kind of similar to, maybe when you buy like a yogurt, a lot of yogurts claim that they contain live cultures, but if they don't actually list the particular strains, they may not actually contain any cultures at all because of the pasteurization process. And so you might be spending $120 on this, jar of colostrum, and it may not actually contain anything that you were told that it would. And I find it interesting that one of the studies that ARMRA references on their website, it's from the National Library of Medicine, and it basically states that the clinical efficacy of bovine colostrum is between 20 to 60 grams in powder form. But with ARMRA, I don't even know how to fucking pronounce this brand, only 1 gram per serving is available in a small packet. And for the 120 bulk option, it has only 2 grams per serving. So it's like you would almost have to like consume the entire container of, this colostrum to even actually reap any of these benefits. So again, I think like it just kind of goes to show that a lot of these supplement brands, it may seem like they're in your best interest, but a lot of them are just like trying to make money, and a lot of it is snake oil. I'm not saying that what they're doing and creating is snake oil, but you do have to like actually probably take a whole lot more than what these brands even say. It's kind of similar to like an adaptogenic like mix or latte. Like it might actually only contain 2% of, lion's mane, but they're selling this beverage for $8 or $9 just because it says that it contains lion's mane. My views on it, it's expensive, it's exclusive. This is an elitist product. The product is definitely marketed towards like young, affluent women who are likely already have very healthy routines that support their gut and skin. I think wellness is such like a slippery slope, and it can really brainwash people into thinking that they have to have this like purity mindset where everything has to be like so completely optimized and you have to have the most perfect gut in the world. And like there's no such thing. Like there's going to constantly be like an ebb and flow of like our general health. And We're so easily influenced, and we all lack this like ability to make sound and logical decisions for ourselves because we're just constantly bombarded with ads, and the algorithm almost makes you like fall into this trap that, and you can't get out of this trap unless you like go and purchase the hot new item. I think if you want to take colostrum, great, but whenever there is like a new buzzy supplement that does emerge, like, and is only being kind of discussed in these like goopy circles, I feel like that definitely deserves an eyebrow raise. Like, there's been so much more, talk about collagen and like its benefits, and like that's been like a product that's been like researched far more. It's far more available. It's been talked about on other very credible health and wellness podcasts that I would say like take that first versus spending $120 on the supplement that we have very little really research on and is like fairly new and hasn't been discussed as much. But if it makes you feel good and you have the ability to spend all that money, like go for it. But this is not something that I plan on partaking in. I'm gonna stick with like my collagen that I buy from Trader Joe's. That's $11. And yeah, I think it's like interesting that this is like now the new trendy supplement. Kate and I are always are talking about like what's going to be the new thing, and we feel like adaptogens really died. So it's kind of interesting that colostrum has risen to the surface, but again, it comes as no surprise given the claims that it touts.
Yeah, it definitely is becoming a status symbol. Like, if you can afford to have it, and as you mentioned, it's a lot of affluent, like white women that are kind of pushing like the Omro, whatever colostrum stuff. I definitely don't think it's necessary either. I'm going to stay on my creatine collagen train, like Emma mentioned. But yeah, I mean, the only way I could see this really being applicable is like if you had a healthcare practitioner and they told you specifically, like, you should try this for this specific thing. But I do feel like it is becoming a murky supplement of like, one, what are people even taking it for? To what are even the like purported benefits of this? So probably just save your money and go get a little, sweet treat instead. But that's the pod. It's a Monday here in New York. You got any fun plans for the night, dog? Wait, you're on mute. I don't know if you can even hear me. This is so funny. Do you guys know that we have microphones? Can I hear you now? No, I can't hear you, dog. I love this. Should I just end the pod talking to myself? I don't know. I think I'll end the pod for Emma. We'll see if we can bring her back. Try to talk again. I don't know. I think I.
Hello?
Oh yeah, you're back. Okay.
Okay, I wasn't on mute, so either that footage did come through or it didn't. I said I was gonna make dinner, and then I need to buy more distilled water. I frantically bought a humidifier at 7 a.m. on Friday after I like got 2 hours of sleep because I'm convinced that the air in my apartment is super duper dry, and that's why I'm sick. And I feel like it's been working, so I need to get more distilled water to fill that baby up.
Yes, do that. I'm off to eat some salmon for dinner. I've been obsessed with salmon recently. Like, I just rediscovered it. And, gonna do all my weird holistic shit to cure my body of its ailments, the best I can. But thank you for listening to this week's episode of CMOS Girlies. As always, you can find us on the meme page, the pod every single Tuesday. You can join Geneva to make some CMOS Girlies friends. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.